Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I'm your radio, radio show. I'm your radio, radio show.
Hello, hi, and welcome to the Niler 9 podcast. You're listening to the voice of Niall Byrne, the co-host and founder of Niler 9. And on this week's episode, we are going to be talking to Saint Sister. That is Gemma Doherty and Morgan McIntyre. They are Saint Sister, a band we've talked to before on the podcast. They have a new album out called Where I Should End. This week, that is Friday, June 25th. So maybe by the time you hear this, you may have heard the album. And they are wonderful guests to talk to. We're big fans of their album and their music. And I think they have a lot to say. Gemma and Morgan met in college in 2014. This is their second album that they're about to release. And, you know, we talk a lot in this interview about the idea of putting a name or genre on your music. They had a term called atmosfolk, which, you know, was very useful, but they've since moved beyond that now on this album, and they're very much standing front and center and featuring themselves in their videos. So we talked to them about that, and we also feature five songs that they are inspired by or that inspired their music, and some spoiler alert, some very Niler 9 friendly songs in here. You're going to hear myself and Andrea Cleary talk to Morgan and Gemma from Saint Sister shortly. And just a little bit of housekeeping as well, if you want to support Niler 9. And I think, you know, we do it. We've been doing this a lot. We've been pushing podcasts out every week for a long time now. And if you listen to it and you appreciate it and you look forward to it, I would hope that you maybe consider putting some money where your mouth is, or where our mouth is, from a fiver a month on patreon.com/Niler 9. There's exclusive playlists and a Discord community having chats about reasons to be cheerful at the moment this week. So all sorts of stuff talking about the gigs that are happening at the moment and being announced. So that's a Discord access if you want that. It's patreon.com/Niler 9. Now, without further ado, let's listen to a quick song from Saint Sister before we delve right into the chat with Morgan and Gemma.
Somewhere in between you and the television screen, I guess I should have known it was always gonna be sex bomb. And just like that, the karaoke's over. Let's go home.
I'm just
Saint Sister. Hi.
Hi. What's
going? How's it going?
Good.
Nice for you to join us. From where are you guys at the moment? Where are you? You're not together.
No.
We're on separate together. Zoom windows today.
We are. So, we're both in Dublin though.
Very good. Very good.
Yeah.
Very good. How are you guys doing? What is up? Album is coming out very soon.
Yeah.
June 25th.
It is.
Where I should end. So you've been on the promo trail, I guess. You've been on the, you know, you've been sharing songs and doing bits. And how are you feeling now? How are you feeling about what's coming? What's coming down the line for you?
Yeah, really excited. It's kind of weird releasing music in this environment and not being able to play for people and to interact with people. And I think that took us a while to get used to. But we've been sitting on these songs for a long time now, so it's just more than anything just excitement at the idea that they're going to be out there and kind of not ours anymore. So feeling good.
Yeah, it is a weird time. Obviously, we keep talking about it, but you know, do you feel like we're getting closer to some sort of normality now?
It feels like it. We just announced tour dates there the other day, and that's the first time that we have done, you know, throughout this whole thing, and they're not until November, but yeah, I don't know, with the way things are going, it definitely feels like we're getting closer to something. And everyone's adapted, everyone spent the whole year just readjusting and relearning and learning how to do things differently, but I feel like at the same time, yeah, I don't know, it feels like things are on their way back.
Yeah, November feels like, you know, something is possible for sure. We should, by November, you think, yeah, okay, we're definitely going to be doing gigs again, right?
Like something has to come back.
Yeah,
you know, it can't last forever. So,
you know, with the album coming out, has it felt different then to kind of put these songs out in advance, like the songs that you've shared with us in advance of the album, and like, because you don't have that live arena, it's very much an online experience.
Mm. Yeah.
Has that been an impactful thing for you guys? Have you felt that in a different way than what you usually would have?
I think like once you, as Morgan said, I think you said, we recorded this like quite a while ago. So it was finished before everything kind of kicked off. Like this album was finished at the start of 2020. And we'd obviously hoped to be able to be bringing it out a bit earlier than that. But I think once the studio part is done and you kind of wrap up the tracks, how you get back into them then is playing them live, and they take on a different life sort of. And it's almost like I always find it's in two parts. Like you have the studio part and that's the song, and then it goes out in the world, but all of a sudden you're playing it live, it takes on a different head, almost a different meaning in a way, and you know, it starts to take a different form. So I guess we haven't had that part of it, so it's been trickier to kind of find your way back into the music, if that makes sense. But we've been like making a lot of videos and things, which is a bit new for us, so that's been a nice new kind of venture.
I mean, you talked about how you wanted to maybe put yourself a bit more front and center, and that's like a very deliberate thing to do. So how did you, like, I mean, first of all, is there any particular reason for that, and then how did you approach that?
I think there's a few reasons for it. I think our first album, for loads of different reasons, kind of we promoted it in a certain way, and we I think it was then talked about in a certain way, and that's all kind of part of parcel, and it's that kind of fairy folk ethereal thing, which is not necessarily a bad thing. But I think then when we recorded the next album, when we had those songs, it didn't feel like it fit in that world at all. And I think we're conscious of like women who get stuck in that world. Like there's a great article in Irish Times or an interview with the Staves, and they talk about not wanting, just because they've got long hair and they sing in harmony, not to be pigeonholed in a certain kind of world. So I think that's all kind of going through our heads, and then we were writing these songs that didn't feel like they fit, and just kind of they felt more direct and more honest and more present in general. So we felt like we should be more present, and that was a natural step, I guess. Then having decided that was something we'd wanted to do, it was another thing actually doing it and kind of taking that step, because we aren't necessarily people who are very comfortable in that sphere. Like we love singing on stage, but then the next thing of like dancing in a video, I think if someone had told us that a year ago, we would have laughed at them. But then we partnered up with like Algorithm Productions, who are an amazing production company, and they really worked with us and really helped give us the confidence. And I'm so glad we did it, because I feel like we've just taken not necessarily a step upwards, but definitely a step away from the kind of videos that we would have done before. And it was just so much fun. I think that's what we learned, that you could have loads of fun while making music.
Yeah.
I suppose it helps to have each other to lean on when you're moving into a space where you have to be that bit more confident. It would be, I imagine, a lot harder to do that if you were both solo artists, if you didn't have each other.
Yeah, I think we were kind of working through that together. And also because the live side of things was gone for a while, it sort of just gave us the space to think about that. And, you know, it wasn't that it was a huge decision the first time around. It's just not something we were massively comfortable in and never got to. But there was just a lot more space. Because the album was finished, we just had the time to really like sit on it and think about where we wanted to go with that. And that's been a bit of a gift as well. You mightn't always have that time.
Yeah, I was thinking about, you know, that term atmosfolk when you came out, and it was like, it was very useful at the time, because, you know, it does kind of set yourself apart, but then maybe it feels a bit more like an albatross around your neck there, where you're like, oh, well, this is what we are. And then, you know, I remember talking to James Vincent McMoore about this years ago, and, you know, he was talking about how when he made his first album, it was very much like, you know, he was wearing a flannel shirt and he was playing acoustic guitar. So therefore he was like, singer, songwriter, folk musician. He was like, that's not what I wanted to be. It's just, that's all I had at my disposal in terms of like my music and my instrumentation and stuff. But I didn't want it ever to be like that. So, you know, getting out of a box that you've maybe, you know, willingly like created for yourself a little bit, just even as a marketing thing, which is, you know, I thought like the atmosphere thing was very useful because it does kind of describe it. But also, yeah, maybe it does. Did it feel like maybe a bit restrictive?
It was, you're right. It was very like descriptive. So for someone who maybe didn't know the tunes, it kind of made sense. But I think it's just that, just the same when you're talking about James Vincent McMoore, like it's not like you don't set out to do these things. It's just like you write some music and you fall into, you know, you start playing it and then these things kind of happen around you and you're part of it. And then, but it doesn't, I think for us, it didn't feel like we just necessarily wanted to feed into something specific. It was just like we made what we wanted to make and you kind of see where it goes from there. But it's not that it's not a bad thing, or it's not, you know, oh god, we'd never talk about that. It's just like kind of regrouping when you're making a new album and being like, okay, well, what? I think it's more about not being limited by anything that you think someone might expect or that you expect of yourself, even particularly because we're a duo, I think, and there's only two of us in the studio. The kind of like the world's your oyster in terms of, you know, we're not a four-piece band or, you have to kind of fit within everyone's instruments or everyone's tendencies. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, it was a blank canvas in terms of what we wanted, where we wanted to go with it. So it's more about not wanting to be limited by anything or by what you had on stage at the time, I think.
And what did the drawing board kind of look like for you guys when you were setting out to start recording in terms of sound, in terms of lyrics, themes, all of those sorts of things?
I guess there wasn't really a drawing board, more like a series of songs that kind of flew out at a quicker than we were used to. So I think we were kind of buoyed by that. And just going back, I feel like the first album has such a specific world for me, and it feels very heavy and foggy and misty and kind of and hard and slow. And the second album, it just felt so much lighter and quicker. And I think to me, that's what was so exciting. I had really put it into my head that we were these slow writers that had a very specific job to do. And then it seemed like we were writing songs that we would never have written before. And they were coming out easily, which has stopped again. I have to admit that I'm back in the like kind of fog of no inspiration. But for a brief spell of time, it seemed like we were kind of on a roll. And I think that was just so exciting. And that then made us really excited about the sounds that we're using and kind of branching out, and then in turn the videos as well. And kind of, we just had space, which was one of the few good things out of everything that's happened the last year, instead of being on this kind of treadmill of just about kind of fulfilling the expectations. We were able to take a breath and see what we really wanted. And I think the whole atmosphere thing, not to go on about it too much, but it's just about not setting a narrative for yourself. And that happens in so many ways. Like I remember a director talking about a well-known rock band saying about how it was so cool that they weren't in any of their videos. And that was a couple of years ago. And I put that in my head and thought, oh, it's so cool not to be in your videos. It's way more like rock and roll or whatever. And then just kind of figuring out that that's not necessarily the case. And everyone has different styles and everyone wants to do music in a different way, and that you can kind of break those expectations.
That's interesting what you're saying earlier about, you know, being to you, so therefore you don't. It's something I've been thinking about a lot in terms of a band, you know, always having to have an input on a song, you know, a band, like a musician in the band input on every song, so they feel like they are, you know, control in some way and they are contributing and all that kind of stuff. I think it's just really something that maybe you don't really think about an awful lot. If you're not in the studio or in a band dynamic where you're like, oh, we better like put some bass on this, or like, whatever it is, we better include it so they have something to do.
Yeah.
I think can be, limits are good, but did you have any limits for, did you ever set limits for yourself in the recording?
I suppose that is, as you say, like, limits are good in a way, because if you leave it wide open, like, you're never going to get the thing done. We did limit it on time, I guess, in the sense that we booked like a block of time, and we were quite, everything, you know, was fairly demoed going in there. So in that sense, we knew we couldn't let it run away with itself and just be going forever and be recording forever. But we did also, we brought in a lot of like guest players this time, which we also didn't really do the first time around. It was a lot more just like in the room, ourselves and Alex, who we produced the last one with, but we produced this one ourselves and brought in more of like a live band feel. And we brought in string players from Crash Ensemble, and we had Lisa to collaborate with us. So we just kind of opened it out a bit more and let ourselves experiment a little bit more. But yeah, it's true. And it's something I don't think we really thought about that much until a couple of years ago either, was the fact that we are a duo and there's just the two of us, and we both have like very different roles within that. And when we're playing live, we didn't really think about it because we're both on stage and, you know, we're both performing. But in the studio then it is, or in the writing process, it is a very different thing. And, you know, Morgan's very much the lyricist and writes the melodic material, and then I'll come at it from arrangement and production. So in that sense, it's we're doing very different things, and we're kind of working at different times sometimes. And I think only really on this album did we lean into that and allow ourselves to like really feel that out. I think the first album was a lot more sporadic, and, you know, we didn't really, it just kind of came about somehow, but this one felt like a bit more of a process.
Should we talk about you selected some songs for us, songs that, not to spoil it, but some are very close to this podcast's heart.
It's a fantastic collection of five songs, I have to say. I'm just so happy with all of them.
But yeah, so we'll play a bit of the first song, and then we'll maybe come back and discuss a little bit about what it is about that song that maybe has inspired you. And this is first song is Julie Jacklin, and it is called Body. Just a boy who could not get to a domestic flight without lighting up in the restroom, got cold, cloud of smoke, thumb still on the light. You look so proud. Couldn't wait to call a friend. We had to fly back home. Never got the money back for that weekend. Right there on the Sydney tarmac, I threw my luggage down. I said, I'm gonna leave you. I'm not a good woman when you're around. That's when the sound came in. I could finally. I felt the changing of the seasons, all of my senses. Okay, that was Julia Jacklin. The song's called Body from the album Crushing in 2019. We are big fans of that, aren't we, Andrea?
We are. We were just talking about it literally on the podcast last week. I can't remember how it came up, but she's one of these artists that whenever we find a new artist that we love, we're always like, remind you a little bit of Julia Jacklin, wouldn't she? Like, we always come back to her. It's become such a classic album for us. So I assume you guys loved it as well.
That's it, like a classic album. I think she is just one of those. She's a modern day classic songwriter. I think she's gonna. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I just think she perfectly writes songs, and especially that last album. It's just a perfect breakup album. I don't think you can beat it, really.
And wasn't this the first song? Am I right in thinking this is the first song we would have heard off the second record? And we were huge fans of the first one. Yeah. But then it was one of those things where like that, and that album obviously did so well, and we were massive fans of that album and had seen her live a few times. And then when this song came out, we were just like, oh my God, how is it better? How is it taking on a whole new form? And it just like immediately left up, and that was like really exciting.
I think that's... I was so...
No.
Oh, sorry, go ahead. I was going to say, I was so excited when I saw that you guys had chosen this song in particular, because something I love about this song is how close her vocals feel. Like there's no air around her at all.
Yeah.
And that's something I'd very much associate with listening to you guys, where the vocals are kind of so forward and so almost breathless in the mix. Is her vocal style and that style of recording something that you guys admire and like to do in your own work?
But yeah, I think so. I think she's just got that amazing presence and directness. And I just remember hearing this song for the first time and then going through a series of making anyone that I could listen to and being at a party and everyone dancing. And I'm like, no, we got to play this song, and then sticking it on. And then because it's such a slow build, just like staring at everyone being like, OK, are you getting it?
Yeah.
I think definitely her vocals are just, that's the other thing. Like the fact that she can write those songs and also have a world class voice. I just like, she's got everything. Yeah. But for me, I love her songwriting and her honesty and the little vignettes that she kind of paints, and then that song in particular, you just see the whole, I've thought about that so many times, the scene on the tarmac and the police coming into the plane, and then fast forward, and then she's looking backwards, but in the next verse talking about the scene with the camera, and it's just, I have such a full, I feel like I've seen that movie because it's so well painted.
Yeah.
And that's such an inspiration. Like that's what I want to achieve when I try and write. And I think that's where we should all be trying to get to.
Yeah.
I feel like we all know that guy as well, who had a cigarette in the plane bathroom.
Yeah.
Like we know him. We might have dated him, you know, like he's a very familiar character to us.
Absolutely.
And she just attacks him so beautifully. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's a wonderful songwriter and
she's amazing.
We're big fans, and we hope we hear some more from her soon again. Did you read that Pitchfork article in the end, Andrea? I didn't actually get around to it, but was a kind of a catch up with her in Pitchfork recently. I was like, what is she up to? What's happening? I think she's just in Australia hanging out.
She released that. And absolutely.
Like everyone else.
A heartbreaker of a Christmas song this year as well. Oh my God.
Yeah, that was
the saddest thing I've ever heard. It's so beautiful.
Did you guys catch her in Whelan's when she played?
Yeah.
We did.
And then the Button Factory thing after that as well. Oh, I just...
Yeah, it's just stunning. Like, she sounds the same live.
Yeah.
The exact same.
Which is really rare to find someone who really captures that in a recording as well. And it brings the exact same energy. She's amazing.
So your next track is... a Philip Glass track. Will we listen to it first and then you can tell us a little bit about it?
Sure.
Yeah, sure.
This is Mishima from Philip Glass. Thank you. Yeah, that was Philip Glass. The song is called Mishima, I think. It's from the soundtrack to a 1985 film, Mishima, A Life in Four Chapters. Have you seen the film, guys?
Yeah, I saw it. I saw it a good while ago. So it's about the Japanese author Mishima, who kind of plotted his whole life out as though it were a novel or a series of novels. And I don't want to... Yeah, it's a biopic anyway by Paul Schrader, and it was... It was a George Lucas and Francis Ford Coppola movie from 85. I don't want to spoil the whole narrative, but yeah, he's an incredible character. And yeah, it's a really, really, really mad story, but it has this beautiful soundtrack by Philip Glass. And I love that the whole soundtrack's really beautiful, and it's really interesting the way that it's used in the movie as well, and the way that they sort of interplay the like footage from his life with, the reimagination of it. But the I think the way that they've done it is that the recording that you heard there is the Kronos Quartet, so an American quartet from San Francisco, and the real footage from his own life is all portrayed by that part of the score is the Kronos Quartet, I think, and then the rest of the movie is scored. It's a bigger kind of instrumentation with string orchestra and a lot of percussion and stuff, but that particular track is the... It's called Mishima Closing, so it's at the end of the soundtrack, and I just think it's like the most beautiful, beautiful piece of music. Like, it's so kind of succinct and concise, and it's quite simple, but I just think it's so, so beautiful. And that recording of it as well, I just think it's perfect. Like, I can't describe it, but I just became a bit obsessed with it over the like last couple of years, and just always gravitate back towards that recording and kind of have it on. And yeah, just there's such a rawness to it, to the way the players are playing, and like there's so much emotion. And I think for being Philip Glass is widely a minimalist composer, but there's so much kind of real emotion and emotive writing in there as well, and you really, really hear it in this recording. I think it definitely has fed in all over the gaff, because we brought strings in on this album, and I hadn't really made... It's one of those things I hadn't made the connection till long after, but it's no coincidence that I ended up arranging for strings for this record, and that's probably my most played track on my Spotify for that year. So I'd say it has fed in somewhere.
It's a beautiful track. I haven't seen the film, but I know that track. When I clicked it, I thought I didn't know it. And then as soon as it started playing, I was like, oh, I instantly recognize this. So I have no idea where I would have come across it, but it's the how the string players are playing, that you're right, there is just this kind of rawness. It's not a very clean sort of line. It doesn't sound like the kind of traditional romantic sounding strings. It's got a real grit to it, which I love. It's really lovely.
There's a real edge to it. And just talking of recognizing it there, I think Philip Glass is cousins with Ira Glass from the This American Life podcast. I think some of those themes from that soundtrack are like under some of the This American Life episodes.
Where I've heard it, yeah.
So it wouldn't be the string version of the theme, but I think there's like, maybe it's on an electric guitar or something, but you definitely, you'd hear it when you listen back to some of those.
Yeah, that might have been where I heard it then.
Yeah, and there's a number of moments on the record where you do really like lean into, allowing the players to take over, and that must be nice to let that happen on your record.
Yeah, there were just some moments on this one. It was the last track on the album that when we were kind of putting it together, and Morgan had sent the full set of lyrics and melody, and I was kind of trying to arrange around that. That was the first place that I heard a place for strings, and we kind of it was quite late on. We were going into the studio maybe a few weeks later, but at that point I was like, could we get a quartet in, and what would stop us from doing that? And it's back to that, like, the limitations thing. Kind of took a while, and then I was like, oh, there's nothing stopping us from doing that. So we just kind of let that one play out, and once we'd arranged any dreams, I was kind of like, there are other places on this record where there's kind of space for that. And then kind of the string section at the end of Manchester Air and at the end of Irish Hour, which is another track on the record, they were kind of born out of that, but they kind of took on a bit of a different life then once we had made that made that decision.
And then, you know, coming back to the idea of collaboration as well, another, like, you've got close collaborators in terms of, like, people like Elias and who, you know, have helped you with the visual aspect of and Joshua Fanning as well. So, I mean, can you talk to me a little bit about that and, like, how that is so important maybe these days? And maybe, mm-hmm. you know, it's so present these days, isn't it? Like, the public face of Saint Sister, you know?
Yeah, I think it's something that we had time to think about it this time around, and also we're probably a bit better at relinquishing control to other people and kind of picking people that we really trusted and letting them go wild. I think that was a big lesson we learned in the studio, but also because the studio was experience was so different the first time to the second time. The first time it was only the three of us and we kept it very close, and then the second time we just, I think, in confidence, you grow in confidence and you realize things are better when you let people in. And I think that, yeah, that was the case for the artwork as well. And Elias, it's just great when you get someone who kind of feels like they understand what you're trying to get at. And we spent a lot of Zoom sessions with Elias and Josh going over different typefaces. And I think it was important to us that we changed a few of those things. So, to represent like the new kind of style and the more forward facing energy that we had. And it was one of those things we talked around the thing for hours, like literal hours. And then all of a sudden it clicked. And then it was like, oh, okay. All that time and all the conversations back and forth and all the different references, they all added up to this really specific coming together and understanding. And I think Josh Fanning is incredible. He's just an expert, I think. But it was a real pleasure to work with him. And then that fed out into the videos as well and working with Algorithm. And yeah, just I think that's one thing we did well this time. We found people who were really, really invested and really talented, and they just helped build the project up.
Yeah, it's important to have a team of people you can call on who, you know, understand where you're coming from and who can help realize those things as well. It's like more than ever, especially, you know, I mean, we live in a world where like the independent artists are kind of doing things themselves, even if there's labels and all that kind of stuff. You kind of have to be in control of your own destiny, your own narrative, your own career as well, and you know, everybody else is there to help facilitate those things as well. So it kind of does suggest, I think, do you feel that at all? Like, I mean, you kind of are going on and doing this yourself. And I think that's what people are reacting to at the moment. I think you've seen a lot of Irish artists, especially, who are, you know, following their own path, I would say. So you're seeing a lot of that at the moment, which I think is great. And obviously that's what people respond to, some form of authenticity as well.
You know? Do you find it easier to kind of open yourselves up to collaborators on a second record, like having already sort of got to know how you work together and got to understand your sound? Is it easier then once you have that foundation to start inviting people in and a bit of experimentation?
You're talking about like the on the first record not letting people in as much, but it's just like not having the confidence to do that really, or not really knowing what you're trying to do yourself. So it's kind of hard, I think, to do that when you're just kind of going along and trying to figure it out along the way. So yeah, I think the thing this time is just having that little bit more experience and having done one before. I guess you know what's required and you know what the different parts are, because you know what, you know all the different elements that there are to making a record. And I don't think the first time around we didn't know what things just kept going along. We were like, oh God, we have to do this, or it's such a multifaceted thing, especially now, as you said, Niall, that like everything is online. In the absence of gigs, it's just become like from the point at which we started being a band to now, like the internet is just a different place, and like the expectation of what you have to do to kind of get your music out there, it's just totally different. So it's definitely something that that I'm personally anyway always battling with, like the, you know, just be social media and being online and kind of having to, it's such a huge part of releasing music at the minute. And hopefully I think it's because it's the only thing right now that you don't have the gig part of it. And that's where you normally get, that's your release, or that you know, your own personal release of expression. And it'll be really nice, I think, when that comes back and you can find a bit more of a balance. But at the minute, it's all online, which is interesting.
I think what has to happen is one of the songs has to go viral on TikTok. Like, oh, I hate to say it, but
don't talk to us about TikTok.
You're going to have to start some kind of a viral dance or something. I think that's the rules now, isn't it?
Listen, yeah.
We're trying.
We know.
Desperately trying.
Yeah. It's strange seeing the Instagram has brought back the number of likes automatically again.
Has it?
Yeah.
Oh, great. So you can
actually, it was hidden for, the last year or 2 years, something like that. Yeah. It's back again. It's like, you can turn it off if you want, but like, it's automatically back on. I was like, oh, weird.
Oh, God.
I like that.
I don't know.
Forgot
about
metrics. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, that's strange.
Your next track is a track by Big Thief, which is also a band very, very close to us here. I think maybe me a little bit more so than Niall. But
you just got announced for a gig today.
Yeah. You did. Yeah. It's so exciting. This track is Mary. Mm-hmm. So we'll take a little listen to this.
Playing on insane. We love me like you loved me in the January rain. Mom and Dad in violins, song the country silence, the needles stop the kicking, the clothespin on the floor, and my heart is playing hide and seek, the waiting count to four. Will you love me like you loved me, and I'll never ask for more.
That's Big Thief. Song is called Mary, from their album Capacity, which came out in 2017, I believe. Mm-hmm. We saw Big Thief. When was the last time? Vicar Street, 2019.
Don't talk about the war. Basically, I say this every time they come up in the podcast. Went to see them. My favorite Big Thief song is UFOF. It was my favorite song of that year. I think it's one of the best songs ever written, and they didn't play it. And I was very upset.
No.
I was extremely upset, and Niall had to remove me from Baker Street.
I
was refusing to get up. I was like, they're gonna come back, they can't not play it. And then
the lights were on in the venue.
The lights were on, people were sweeping the floor, and I was like, I'm not moving.
Did you see them in Whelan's the time before?
I don't think I even knew them at the time. I was really late to the party with Big Thief, actually.
I think they did the same kind of thing. I can't remember specifically which songs, but I think maybe they were towards the end of their tour and they were like breaking in some new songs, which I do love. But then your heart's breaking because every time there's a song going down, you're like, oh my God, there's less chances of them playing my favorite song. And I think that happened again. They're bad for that, them Big Thieves.
They are. But I've seen videos of them playing UFOF live, and I don't know how well it works. Okay. Just because of the textures and that song are kind of, they work much better in the studio, I think, than in a live setting. But I do think they played Mary when we were at the Vicar Street gig, and I think it was arranged slightly differently. But tell us about your relationship with this song. It's a really powerful one.
I remember seeing this song. I think it was at the top of a list. I think it was the NPR's song of the year, that year, and this was number one. And I hadn't heard of Big Thief before then, and listened to that, and just listened to it one time, and was like, yep, they're completely correct. This is the best song of the year. I have no doubts about it. She's just a brilliant songwriter. And I think what really attracted to me about this song and a few of her songs around that time is the use of names in them, which I think is really interesting. And I remember hearing an interview with her where she talked about using the name, well, Mary probably does, I think that song's about her grandmother, but I'm sure that
pertains to that, but using, say, Paul in another song as a way to talk about herself or certain people, but they might not necessarily be called Paul, but picking a name and that being the funnel through which you could like direct kind of a wide amount of information to. And I just, that idea stayed in my head for a little while. And when we were writing this, the record, there was a song, it's now called Oh My God, Oh Canada. But at the time, it felt like it was about 100 different people, but very, very specific. And I knew why they were all linked. And it was all about not being a good enough friend and always feeling like you're not good enough for the person that you're talking to. And that idea of just picking something like a name, a label, and directing everything towards that and kind of emptying it out into this space really attracted me. And I had... yeah, that her words in my head. So we were in Canada at the time when we were writing it, and it felt right just to kind of use that big empty space. It was covered in snow at the time, and that's, so she's really informed the way, like very directly informed the way that I've written a lot of the songs. And I think at the time you're not aware that you're kind of using these little techniques, and I don't know, it's only after kind of that you're like, oh, that's why I chose that, because I really related to that.
And it shares some commonalities with the Julia Jacklin song as well, in that it's very visual. You can, there are images, the clothes pegs on the floor. Mm-hmm. Like there's a lot of images that you can really picture in your mind, and everybody has a specific kind of image of what that is.
Yeah,
they're both like poems, really. Those two songs,
exactly like poems. And I think even the way she really pushes how many words you can fit into a line without it feeling awkward, and like her timing,
she's like a rapper. Yeah. Like, she's amazing.
It's a whole other skill, I think, and something that not everybody has, that ability to push and pull like that, and to really use words. I find that sometimes if words are used because of the sound of them, that it works on one level but maybe not the other. But she has that way of, if you read that without any context, it would it would read like a beautifully composed poem, but then listening to it, the sounds of the words convey this whole other meaning, and they just they're so musical. So that's something that,
and for such a slow song, it's like she's kind of, there's the tempo of how she's singing, especially like towards the chorus and stuff, is so quick, the words kind of tumbling out of her and tumbling over each other, these like run-on sentences and run-on lines. It's just, I love how she plays with that kind of idea of tempo in the song. You can have something really slow against something really quick, which is just, she's amazing.
She is.
Have you listened to much of her solo stuff?
A little bit. I've listened to it kind of more passively, so I need to do more active listening and kind of get into my head a bit more. But I remember somebody telling us, they were in this songwriting class or course with her, and she said that she thought she was a really slow writer. And I just think that's madness, because she's got all this all of her solo stuff and all the stuff with Big Thief, and they turn out records so quickly that I was kind of like, oh no, if you think you're slow, where's the hope for the rest of us?
No, they're definitely not slow. No way are they slow at writing. No. God.
Because yeah, I mean, like,
I can't keep up.
There was two Big Thief albums, and then the next year she released two solo albums, one kind of lyrical and one instrumental. And then Buck Meek, who is in the band as well, he released a solo album last year as well. And she's like, what are you taking?
What are you doing?
What is that? Like, where do you get that level of productivity? Like, because it's insane. It like, and for it all to be good as well is the thing. That's so astounding.
Really good.
it's madness.
And so our next artist is also a very lyrical songwriter as well, is Kevin Morby. And the song is called Come To Me Now. Let's play a bit from this, from City Music in 2017. So.
Ain't got no key. Where do you go? Boy, when you die, is it pretty and slow? Is it up real high? I don't want to know. I can't wait for the sun to go down. Tired of squinting at this god-awful town. I can't wait for the moon to rise. She's my friend, always been. You can see it in my eyes that I love her. Yeah. Oh, I love her, and she loves me too.
So that's Kevin Morby. That's an artist I only got into last year. Was it last year Sundowner came out?
Yes, yeah, with the Sundowner record, yeah.
Yeah, Andrea's been on Kevin Morby for a while.
Been poking Niall about him for a couple of years now when you listen to him.
And I did, finally.
And you did, and you loved him. This is a brilliant song. And another quite cinematic kind of sound, I think. It makes me think of like a Western or something.
Yeah, completely. It's sort of, there's just something about this track. It kind of like shimmers, like the whole thing. It's quite like, yeah, subtly cinematic. And it's really like vast, but like it feels like you can see it or something, you know. And it really, really draws you in. And again, quite a close, like intimate, almost like spoken vocal. And it's just one that I feel like we just listen to this a lot on the road and things, and this album, City Music, or the track City Music as well, we would have had on in the van a lot, and just have such like lovely memories of it, of this album. But this song is just one that we always kind of came to a lot when we were kind of referencing on the album, and just there's just like a quality to it. That's one of those ones you can't put your finger on, but you're like, I want it to shimmer the way that song does. It's just really beautiful, yeah.
Yeah, the person that we were mixing with, Benedict McIsaac, was amazing to work with. But one of the things he did, which I guess is pretty common practice, is ask us to make a playlist of references. And this was one of the top songs. And I guess it wasn't even in terms of how it's mixed. It's just, as Gemma said, the feeling of it. We're like, how do we make this record feel like that song? Because it's just got so much to it.
Yeah, and since what can you like? What do you discuss with something like that? Like you're trying to identify something that's kind of hard to identify and hard to imbue with music, you know. So you can play reference tracks and stuff, but like, yeah, it's a very difficult thing, isn't it? Like,
I think so,
tangible almost.
I think we learned that on this record with the mixing references specific. Like, they're really specific. Like, where do you want your bass to sit? Where do you want your snare to hit? How do you want your vocal to sit? Whereas we were just like, I like how this song feels. And he was like, it doesn't help me. We were like, it sparkles. Can you make it sparkle? And he's like, so I don't know if we, I think that's why this one's a good example of just like, it was the feel of it. It was just the kind of the world that he captured something, I think. And those little, like, there's a melodic synth on there that it's almost like little cries. And they're just so beautiful. Like, they're really kind of just really, really draws you in, I think. I like the Western reference as well. It's just really, really vast.
Yeah, I found a lot of that with, you know, I mean, the last album, Sundowner, you know, he said it was his attempt to put the middle American twilight, its beauty profound, well, not always immediate into sound. And you really feel like you're taken to that place with his music as well. And it's actually something that, like, I've noticed in your guys' music, in terms of your lyrics especially, is like references to places. As well, like, can you talk a little bit about like Manchester Air, for example? Like, it's such a great first line as well. From the back of your bike, I told you I was late. You said I can't go much faster. I said, no, not like that. And then there's so many references in there. There's you know, Cabra and Broadstone and stuff. I just like, it always ties you, Capel Street as well in there. So, you know, those kind of references always tie me into, I don't know, they kind of moor me a bit. I always feel geographically moored in a way that, like, okay, yeah, I can feel the story develop here, or like a place in the song. Is that like so important for you?
Yeah, I think I love when other writers do that. And I started doing it, but I have a tendency to overdo it. And I think when we looked back at this record and also the last, we were like, God, every single song has a reference to a place. Maybe they lose their charm when you kind of over egg it, but I just love doing it. It makes me feel good. I love hearing it in a song. I don't know, I'm just probably gonna keep on doing it, and it does like set the scene. It probably helps me when I'm writing it, to because I can see exactly what I was thinking about when it's like that. All of a sudden we tear onto Broadstone, I know exactly the corner around that area where like I'm cycling, and maybe it's quite an indulgent thing, but yeah, I love when other people do it, so I hope people don't mind if I do it.
But I sort of love how that's becoming more of a thing for Irish artists. Like, you get it with Pillow Queens as well. You get it with Fontaines DC. And Fionn Regan, in one of his tracks, he's like a furniture shop down on the Keys. And I think because so much of the music that we would have had access to in Ireland for so many years would be from the UK or from the States. And there is a lot of that kind of sense of place that we can't really connect to. I love now that I can hear a song about Dunamead and I'm like, yeah, you know, I know where that is. This is for us now. And I think long may that trend continue. I love hearing about places that I know, because like you said, you can picture that corner, you can picture that strand, whatever it is, you're like, yeah, that's mine.
I think that's kind of what I was born out of, because I grew up writing songs about like one horse towns and like the dive bars, and I just was regurgitating Belfast. All these really like well-trodden tropes that made me feel like I was part of this American childhood that I didn't have. But I guess it's like, yeah, it's an attempt to try and redress that and kind of bring it back to, because I'm so nostalgic about everything, including lives I haven't lived. So it's like trying to get it back to the reality of things.
Yeah, I think so many people of our generation kind of had that really sudden cultural shift towards Americanisms and, you know, going into school one day and all of a sudden everybody's saying like, or like, oh my god, and like, you know, the Friends take over and all of that it's it's nice to have a bit of like reclaiming Irish spots in music, and then if people from outside of Ireland want to look up what it is, then go for it, you know.
As well as like, there's obviously a lot of talk at the moment about you know, cultural spaces and stuff like that, and you know, I think sometimes like weaving those kind of things into the fabric of the music of the city is you know, kind of highlights those things a bit more, you know. Not that there's many mentions of venues specifically or anything like that, but you know, it's such a, I think it's really interesting, like there's a lot of things happening in Irish music where people are really talking about the Irish experience and the young Irish experience especially. And you know, like Manchester Air is an example of that, you know, talking about a couple who have to go to for an abortion. And so you record that on, or you wrote it at Drop Everything in Ashore, the lovely festival that happens on the Aran Islands. And then you released it to coincide with 3 years since Ireland repealed the 8. So you talk a little bit about that song, and because I think that's, it's something we've heard so much more of in the last few years, and it's been very edifying to see that being represented in songs and seeing like real Irish experiences being represented.
Yeah, I guess that one came about very naturally, and I love all the artists that are making really political music at the moment and representing the Irish experience, and I'm such a big fan of theirs, and I've tried to recreate it myself and different over the years, and never quite felt like I had nailed it. And everything I did always came across like too on the nose and not sincere, and just really didn't work. So I guess we were a bit surprised whenever this came out, and almost didn't realize the political angle until after, because it is just a personal story about something that happens to two people, or and in particular the narrator of the song. And yeah, I guess it's good that it can be used after the fact as a little bit of a nod to that. And especially well, I know there's still work to be done here, but especially given everything that's happening up north, and it's still a very personal song to us, and it's still something that we care about, and that we're trying to keep active in terms of the campaign in the north. And we haven't sang it too many times, but I know that every time we have, I've been kind of close to tears, and I feel like that'll continue for a little while. Because it just was such an emotional time, and singing it brings us back to that time on the island where we were there for a couple of days, went home to vote, and had written the song, and then came back and performed the song. And we performed it after the results came in, and I just remember the feeling of I guess there was a lot of love in the room in the school hall that we were singing in, and a lot of
but still sadness. People were like, we were crying. I don't know about anyone else, but yeah, it's a close one for us.
Yeah, and it is, you're right, you know, it is it's still relevant. It's still, you know, people are still going to get abortions in the UK still, and it hasn't gone away and it hasn't got easier, and there's many things like that we are talking about, and we are and songs like this really do help. Like, they really do. There's an element of, you can use a song like this to have a discussion with a friend about a topic that it's addressing without having to necessarily, you know, address that head on. So, you know, these things are very useful, I think, for people in their daily lives as well. So
I've just had a memory resurface, and it was seeing you guys at the National Concert Hall. And I think it was in the run up to repeal. And I remember being, it was like either in the foyer before going in, or I was reviewing it actually. So I was looking around at the crowd and just seeing a few repeal jumpers around. And there was just something, and then there was kind of allusions that you guys made on stage to it. And it was just, it felt like a very kind of a palpable moment, that show during the campaign, literally just resurfaced as you were talking. That's funny. Yeah, here, you know, 3 years on there. Yeah. So yeah, it's amazing.
Your final choice in terms of songs is from another artist close to our Andrea's heart, especially.
I mean, just is, like, get out of my head. You know, like, it's literally like, God, it's mad.
It is Way's Blood, and the song is called Andromeda.
Nothing in it for me except my heart that's lazy, running for my own life now. I'm really turning some time, looking up to the sky for something I may never.
That's Way's Blood from Titanic Rising 2019 album. That's Andromeda from Way's Blood. So did you guys pick this together, or one of you is individually?
This would have been one that we listened to quite a bit together, wouldn't it? On the road. So this came out in 2019. I think in April or so. And then we were on tour in the States in May 2019. And I think I just listened to this for most of that tour. Just kind of had it in whether it was on in the van or just like in headphones. We both just like fell in love with this one. We've been to see her twice since, haven't we? Went to see her in Button Factory, and then had tickets to go see her in Vicar Street, which sadly did not happen. Is possibly being rescheduled for sometime in the future. But this album, I just like fell in love with it in a way that it just kind of hit me. And you know, you only get like one of those every so often, or a year or whatever, where it's just like, you just can't stop. You can't get out of it, and you keep listening to it. And this song in particular, I don't know, it's just so, just something about like the colors on this album and the arrangements. And it's so, it's really vast, but like really coherent as well. And it's just kind of got a bit of everything, like really kind of classic songwriting, and then like, you know, kind of analog synths, and there's strings on there, and like the soaring kind of pedal steel guitar. Like, there's something about this song is like cosmic or something. It just like takes me somewhere new. And just her harmony and her progressions and where she goes with the melody, it's always somewhere I don't think she's gonna go, which I love. And it just kind of did something to me. And you were a big fan of this album as well, Marie.
It's so great when you're on tour and then both of you fall in love with the same album, because then you can just play it and not very unapologetically and kind of bond over it. But
Yeah, just another example of a gorgeous voice, gorgeous songwriter, mm-hmm. who's doing kind of something a little bit unusual, or and kind of, it was an inspiration for us, and especially that kind of almost country feel to it, and but also keeping it very it's timeless, but it's also modern. I think she, yeah, all those elements together, the way she kind of goes between all the different styles, and as you said, Gemma, makes something really coherent, is something that we kind of aspire to.
Like, her arrangements are so rich and lush and kind of cinematic, but then she kind of just soars over the top of everything, you know, like the guitars are soaring and her vocals soaring. It's incredible.
I mean, the first track I heard from this was Movies. I think that was the first one she released, and I'd never heard anything by her before, and I was on like a packed 46A into town, like on my way to work one morning. It was like gross morning, raining. I popped it on, it was on my like Discover Weekly or whatever, and it came on, and I swear I had this like out of body experience, or like this ASMR sort of feeling. I was like, what the fuck is this?
What is this?
Just like, what is this sound? I've never heard anything like it. And then it was a bit of a wait until the album came out, and then this was the first song I'd heard off the album, and was just like, I don't even care what other songs are on this. Mm-hmm. Those two songs alone make this a classic. And then of course you listen to the rest of them. Like Every Day is one of my favorite tracks from her. That like real like Beach Boys, Phil Spector sort of sound. And she's so versatile and so brilliant. And yeah, like you said, like classic, but also very, very modern and unafraid to make those references to like sitting in a movie screen and like literally naming the album after the movie Titanic and the boat, which I just think is brilliant. Yeah, I haven't seen her live yet. Is she? I've heard she's great. I've seen her on her KEXP shows, and she's just like stunning, ethereal, amazing.
Yeah, she's just kind of like angelic. One of those, you know, she's such a like just a presence on stage, and you're just so kind of drawn to her, and just the way that she moves and carries herself, and her vocals like perfect. And you could hear, that was an incredible gig.
She's
actually
really funny.
Everyone
really
funny. So it's one of those rooms where you're just like, oh, everyone is completely with you, and like she's hilarious between songs, and then she just goes back to like being an ethereal angel. I first heard this album on Dublin Bus as well, so there's
did
something
you?
About
yeah.
that. It's just Dublin Bus written all over it.
She was also one of the artists that name checked Enya in our recent episode. We did a deep dive into the music of Enya, and I actually mentioned you guys in relation to Enya, because I was like, because basically what happened is, when we looked into it, it seemed to be a lot of American artists were talking about how they, you know, were inspired by Enya, and I was like, what is the story with Irish artists? That did they not like Enya? Did they like not? Is it not in the, you know, because are we too close to it and stuff
cool.
like that? But I reckon you guys have a soft spot for Enya. Would I be right?
Yeah, big
I
time.
Can't believe that this is controversial. Like, she is incredible.
it's not controversial.
But like, I thought everybody loved her. Is that not the case? Or do people not like her?
I think, I don't know. Part of me, I just feel like it's taken for granted sometimes like it's Enya and she's out there in the world and like in her castle or whatever. And you're just like, no, her music is amazing. And like, we need to talk about it more.
That's true.
That's all.
No,
that's really
true.
All.
Yeah.
Niall is on a mission now this year. He's on a real, we need to talk about Enya buzz. And it's great.
We'll join you on that.
Yeah.
Why not? Why not?
Just back to Wise Blood. The vocals on that track in particular, the harmonies and how they kind of build. Talk to me a little bit about that, her vocal style, especially on that album, and how that's influenced you as well.
Yeah, she has like moments of that, like what we were talking about with Julia at the start, like the really close kind of intimate vocal, and you're right there kind of front and center. But there's something about her melody and the way that she plays that off the lyrics that it does have just this like soaring quality that it feels more like an instrument at times as well, where it just kind of, you know, it becomes in the best way possible like very textural. And even with just a lead vocal, you know, sometimes you'd be used to hearing that with like with a load of harmonies or a load of backing vocals. But yeah, she just kind of soars and manages to create this other kind of worldliness with it, and then she's straight back into being like kind of direct and intimate. And I think that's a real real nice skill or something beautiful about that album.
I think that's what she does best. She makes it so dramatic, but it's never too much. It's never overdone, even though it's like really going there in terms of the arrangements. Like she doesn't kind of leave anything behind, but it still works. It doesn't ever feel like it's too much. It's kind of like Joan Baez kind of vibes of like really kind of leaning into something, but it just feels so authentic.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can kind of feel that she has a lot of strength behind her voice, but she's not, she never really belts it out. When she wants to have those dramatic vocal moments, she kind of leans more into harmonizing or having the backing vocals there. She's not, you know, grabbing the mic and doing a big Celine Dion it, which I wouldn't mind either, to be honest. But yeah, I think she's very much a kind of a musician's vocalist, if that makes sense at all. Like, you know, she's really thinking about those textures and how it works with everything else, and yeah, there's a lot of strings on this album as well, a lot of kind of big sweeping orchestral statements, which are just gorgeous.
I know, it's beautiful. It's just such a work of art, I think, this album.
Yeah, and the artwork is just it's amazing. Stunning. Like it's amazing. I think her mom shot it, or something to do with her mom, and like she like properly got into a big tank that was a room.
It's the underwater,
amazing.
It's set. Yeah,
it's so beautiful. Yeah, she's amazing. Lovely hair as well.
Lovely.
Can we? You were on Reeling in the Years recently. What was that like?
Just to change the tone.
I have to ask.
That was like a shock.
Catching yourself on reading.
Did you know?
No, not at all. Someone said it to me and I was like, oh, this is really awkward because I think they've mixed this up with someone else. And I was just like, it couldn't be. And I was like, oh, great. What song? And they were like, they named a song and they were like, is this your song? And I was like, no. I was like, it's so embarrassing. It's not us. But then sure enough, like got a text a while later. So I was like, hang on a minute. Yeah, it just is the last thing we were expecting, I think.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
It was amazing.
It's immortalized in Irish history forever now. Yeah. So, fair play. That's a nice thing to have.
We're big fans as well. Like, I watch it all the time and go back and watch the older episodes as well. So, it's, I wish I had been watching that episode live because last week I had it. So, I just wish that would have been much, maybe. Yeah. But,
I know.
Yeah. It's real nice. Yeah.
Yeah, such a nice surprise.
It's been cool watching the past decade on it and seeing even like, you know, Villagers and it's like Soak as well. Like there's a few artists where you're just like, oh yeah, God, they haven't always been around. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like there was a beginning for these for these people who you just sort of are so ingrained in kind of Irish music now that you're like, oh, look at them there on the late. It's funny, yeah. And recognizing the artists as being like contemporary artists who you would go to see. I think, watching Reeling in the Years for the past 10 years, being so close to it has just, it's been a very weird experience, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I watched the 2018 last night and it was the Repeal stuff and it was just so overwhelming. It's such, nothing like a Reeling in the Years to make you cry. Three times.
I've actually put that episode off. I don't think I'm quite there yet. Yeah.
I'd say take your time.
Because the marriage equality one broke me, and I was like, no, can't do this. And it's a weird feeling to even in the earlier ones. It was like the 2010 or 2011. There was like student protests and stuff, and it's a really weird feeling to be watching it and being like, I was. So, and you're kind of looking out for yourself, being like, oh God, please don't show what I look like in 2010.
Was 2018 the last one? Can't do 2019.
I think they can.
Yeah, they'll stop at 2019 and then the next series will start at 2020.
God, love 2020.
No.
Just ignore that one.
They have a decade to do it, so they might just about get it over the line in time.
Oh, God. Just make up some nice things.
Yeah. And then the rest of the decade, nothing of interest is going to happen. It's all going to calm down and it's all going to be totally fine. Everything will be fixed.
What are you guys looking forward to even personally? Like, I mean, what are you missing the most at the moment? Like, you know, you have karaoke song, for example. You can't even go to a karaoke bar.
I know.
All these kind of things you can't do sometimes. You're just like
karaoke.
I just miss, like, No, you go. You had
no, no, no. I was just saying, that's such a shame. Karaoke in particular is like the super spreader, so it's like a definite no go for karaoke. But yeah, I definitely miss going to gigs. Like, I miss playing gigs, but I miss even more being in the front row at a gig, especially your friend's gig, and just like, oh, dancing really stupidly and having a little drink in your hand and going out for dinner. I really miss like a nice dinner.
And just like the spontaneity of things, like just, you know, bumping into people days or nights, taking you places you didn't, you know, that the things just happened, because that can't really happen now. Everything's like very, we're doing this and only these people can come, and like that's getting
we have 18 minutes to hang out and eat a substantial meal together, and
you don't have to do that anymore. It's fine.
Oh yeah, the substantial meal thing is gone. I never minded that.
It's so weird.
I know. I'm just used to it.
I love a substantial meal with my pints. I think we need to normalize that going forward. To be honest, a little soup and a sandwich with your pints at 11 p.m.
Why not?
Well, that's excellent. Five completely excellent songs, and I would say that because I love all of those songs, but they're brilliant, and thank you so much for sharing those inspirations with us.
Thank you guys for having us.
That's been great.
Thanks, Emil.
And really appreciate taking your time and come and say hello to us. And best luck with the album as well. Yeah. I hope it all goes well.
Look, I think people are going
to
love it.
I think it's going to do really well. So congratulations.
Thank you.
And hopefully in the near future, we'll be able to, you know, I don't know, you'd be able to come and have a dance somewhere, like, or whatever it is, or a festival or whatever, like, whatever's happening that isn't, like you say, a too controlled environment.
Yes. And,
so I'm looking forward to those days for sure.
Thanks so much for having us.
See you in a field somewhere.
Thanks so much.
Great. See you guys.
Okay.
All thanks so much.
That's for you now. Left a message for said you're the one who goes away. Underneath the ears, I know. Could really hurt you if I really tried. And there's that birthday card I owe. Don't know why you're always on my side. Oh my God. So small from here. Yes, I'll call you from each station. See you in a shirt. This is the show, and I'm the one who goes away.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.